All right. Beck, are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get going so we have enough time to do some painting tonight. For those of you who have been here, we're talking about the theology of creativity. And this is the third week that we have been here. So far, we started out just by talking about what creativity is. And then last week, we talked about the origin of creativity. And so we worked through the 7 days of creation, all right, 6 days of active work, 1 day of rest. And in this, we got a glimpse of how God creates. What does it look like when God creates, and what does that mean for us? Now, if you were here, you know we breezed over a pretty important part of God's creation, and that is human beings. And that was because we were going to focus on that today. So today, we're going to look at two concepts. One is what's called the Imago Dei, and the other is called the cultural mandate. And so we'll start with the Imago Dei. Imago Dei simply means the image of God, and it refers to the way that God specifically designed human beings. There we go. Genesis 1:26 says, "And God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. What is it that makes human beings different from the rest of creation? In his own image, okay? What does that mean specifically? Beck?
Like, we can talk.
We can talk.
Yeah, like we
so can dolphins. Some of us more than others, yeah. Bigger brain power. So the ability to reason, that is one of the reasons that some people give. Communication is another one. What are some other things that set human beings apart? Souls. Oh man, that's a big one. Right? Okay, we have souls. We have this, we'll get into this a little bit, this eternality in us. What else? We're in the image of God. Well, yeah, it says on the top.
Yeah. We have dominion.
Yeah. It also says it there, yeah. Hey, that's where you find the answers, man. That's the Bible, right? Right, so there's these things that set us apart, and people have debated this. There, some of the reasons that people give are communication, are the ability to reason, tool making. That's what Francis Bacon kind of pointed out. Human beings make tools. Some people point to opposable thumbs because that, you know, has set us apart over time. And then creativity, right? The ability to make art. These are some of the reasons that people have given over time. This is from the Westminster Catechism. This is the answer they give. How did God create man? After God had made all other creatures, he created man, male and female, formed the body of the man of the dust of the ground, and the woman of the rib of the man, and endued them with living, reasonable, and immortal souls, made them after his own image, and this is where you get the definition of what in his image, in knowledge, righteousness, and holiness, having the law of God written on their hearts and the power to fulfill it, and dominion over the creatures yet subject to fall. So the few things that are really pointed out here, there's quite a few things, but we have knowledge, right? That human beings have this specific knowledge of good and evil. Animals don't worry if they're doing good. When they go, man, I'm hungry, I'm going to go kill that thing, they don't go, but should I murder? It doesn't cross their minds, right? And so we have this specific knowledge of kind of some right and wrong. And then righteousness and holiness, meaning we can actually act on that, we can sin. Human beings can break God's law. And in all of this, we see this deeper relationship with God, this deeper relationship with the Creator that exists. And so in all of this, we see human beings have been given a sense of something more. We have somehow more than the rest of creation. We are somehow more like God. And there's a couple things specifically that I'd like to point out. The first is that human beings were made for worship. Human beings venerate and celebrate in a way that the rest of the creation does not. This is a quote that I use probably too often, but it's from David Foster Wallace. It's from a speech that he gave at a commencement address. He said, because here's something else that's weird but true. In the day-to-day trenches of adult life, there's actually no such thing as atheism. There's no such thing as not worshiping. Everybody worships. The only choice we get is what to worship. And the compelling reason for maybe choosing some sort of God or spiritual type thing to worship, he is not a Christian, is that pretty much anything else you worship will eat you alive. If you worship money and things, if they are where you tap real meaning in life, you will never have enough, never feel you have enough. It's the truth. Worship your body and beauty and sexual allure, and you'll always feel ugly. I do have the rest of this on here. And when the time and age starts showing, you will die a million deaths before they finally grieve you. On one level, we all know this stuff. It's been codified as myths and proverbs and cliches and epigrams, parables, the skeleton of every great story. The whole trick is keeping the truth up front in daily consciousness. Worship power, you will end up feeling weak and afraid, and you will need ever more power in others to numb you to your own fear. Worship your intellect, being seen as smart, and you'll end up feeling stupid, a fraud, always on the verge of being found out. But the insidious thing about these forms of worship is not that they're evil or sinful, which we would disagree with, but that's his take on it. It's that they're unconscious. They're default settings. They're the kind of worship you just gradually slip into day after day, getting more and more selective about what you see and how you measure value without ever being fully aware that that's what you're doing. What is he talking about here? Habits. And specifically, what forms those habits? What develops those habits? What was that?
Sinful nature.
What we value, right? So specifically, we will worship something. We will put something as the most important thing in our life, and everything else is going to flow from that. Every single human being worships. Every single human being puts something at that highest point of value. And every single thing that they do, every single thing that they think, every habit flows from what they place in that place of honor. So every person worships, and what we worship matters. It has the ability to build us up or, as he points out here, destroy us. So we get to choose what to worship, but the choice is going to affect every part of life. We're going to skip Brad Pitt's quote for today. Go right to Augustine. Augustine said, "Great are you, O Lord, and exceedingly worthy of praise. Your power is immense and your wisdom beyond reckoning. And so we men who are due part of your creation long to praise you. We also carry our mortality with us, carry the evidence of our sin, and with it the proof that you thwart the proud. You arouse us so that praising you may bring us joy, because you have made us and drawn us to yourself, and our heart is unquiet until it rests in you." What is Augustine pointing to here as he's talking about this struggle that we have within us? Our hearts are unquiet until they rest in you. His point is, it's not up to us to just decide what is worth worshiping. I mean, he's given us the freedom to do that, and yet we were actually made for something. We were designed to have God in that place, and our whole lives will be restless if we don't have God in that place of worship. It's really interesting, that guy David Foster Wallace, he saw something there and was so clear about it, he also hung himself not too long after giving that speech, because he got stuck in the same thing. He couldn't find the right thing to put in that place of worship, and ultimately it ate him alive. So being made in the image of God means that we are created as agents of worship. And we will worship, and our lives will be aligned and fulfilled only when the center of our lives is the God who created us. All right, second thing that is specific to human beings is that human beings were made for authority, right? It says, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. Now, what do you think of when you hear the word dominion?
Power.
Superiority, yeah. Does dominion sound like a good thing? No, for most of us, we've gotten used to hearing words like this, and it kind of strikes us with this idea of kind of abusive leadership, right? A misuse of power. Dominion sounds like what a dictator does and kind of forces power on others. But authority doesn't have to mean abuse, right? Authority is how God created us to be. We were supposed to be the people who actually look out for and care for the world that he has made. And so it's important to acknowledge that human authority is not just a byproduct of power. Human beings are not in the driver's seat of the world simply because we are more powerful than other things or because we are smarter than other things. We have authority because God has given us authority. God has put us in a place of authority. This is what he has created us and designed us to do. And so God's authority over all things has been shared with us. A better word than dominion in many ways is stewardship. We have been put in a place to steward the world that he has created for us. And so we're called to use all the gifts and all the abilities that we have been given to cultivate in a way that is in line with God's good. We're supposed to care for the world as those who are under God's authority. All right, third, human beings were made for responsibility, right? We've been given a certain sense of free will, the ability to obey or disobey, and we will experience the consequences of our decisions. As I said before, with animals, it's a little different. Animals can't reject God and sin. They're just animals, but human beings have been created in this way where we actually have responsibility for how we choose to act. Romans 1 says it this way, for what can be known about God is plain to them because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made, so they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. What does it give for the reason why we have responsibility or we can be found guilty? Yeah. God has created the world. We can see that there is a God clearly by the world around us. He is the creator. The fact that we are creation makes that clear to the point that no one is without excuse. But then what happens when we choose not to acknowledge that, when we choose not to follow that? Do we just kind of stay neutral? Yeah, and it's this process, right? We become more and more blind, more and more darkened. The more that we do not acknowledge who God is, the more that we do not worship him, the more that we actually become blind to the reality of this world, blind to the reality of the Creator. We no longer interact with his world through who he is. We start to actually take it on, and again, exchange the glory of God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. We become so foolish that we have a creator God and we don't worship him, and instead we worship the things that he has created. Now the good news is God takes ultimate responsibility for his creation, right? He actually will come and fix it all. He will come as the final judge. He will punish all evil. He will make all wrongs right. And so we don't have ultimate authority, No, we're the ones who come in and are given the responsibility in this world to apply the truth that God has given to us. And when we don't do it, God holds us responsible. And not just by designing consequences into the creation. Those exist, right? When you don't follow the laws of nature, bad things happen. We also have this reality of eternity. I said it before, souls, this idea of we were created for eternity. Ecclesiastes 3:11 says, He has made everything beautiful. Oh, that's not the right way. In its time. Also, He has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. So we have this reality designed into us that we are made for eternity, yet in a way that we don't understand it all right now. Right? We don't grasp eternity. None of us are smart enough to get all of that crammed into our heads. So why do you think God has done this? Why do you think God has created us as these eternal beings who are far more than we even know, and yet hasn't given us every answer that we wish we had? So that we remain dependent on Him. Right, it goes back to that Augustine thing. If He is what we need, if having Him is what is best for us, giving us a way that we can begin to believe that we are smarter than we are and run off without Him is the worst possible thing for us. And so He gives us enough that we know who He is. He gives us enough so that we may see Him, and yet keeps us in this way that we don't know it all. We're not made to have the whole picture. I think it's actually a beautiful thing when we start to talk about creativity, right? Because when we want to know God, it's kind of like to be able to kind of create this system so that we fully understand Him, so that we can kind of reduce Him down to our level. But when God remains mysterious, when we acknowledge that we don't know everything, then all of a sudden the gap between what we know and who He is leaves this room for imagination. Right? By limiting us, God has given us space to flex the creative parts of our mind. We can imagine God through the signs and the images and the beauty that He has given to us. We are not meant to understand the world through just cold, hard science. There are images for us to, again, imagine something much greater and bigger. I've always had that when you look at all these descriptions of heaven and we're talking about gold streets and encrusted buildings and everyone wants to draw a picture of exactly what is being described instead of imagining just how much bigger and greater that really is. One of the things that the mysteries of God allow us to do is kind of spend time in the ethereal. And this is not a waste of time. It's not something that's just for those people who are right-brained. No, imagination has been designed into us, and God has given us the space to do it. The same thing with creativity. If God's purpose for human beings was nothing more than an outcome, if God was doing nothing but basically saying, this is what I'm trying to do, and so human beings, I'm going to kind of get you there, then we can imagine this whole process of what God is doing in this world as a machine. But God doesn't work like a machine. I mean, it is crazy that He uses us and all of our mess to kind of move His plan along. He could skip us entirely. In this whole idea of idea to process to result, God has the idea and He knows what the result is. And for whatever reason, He includes us in the midst of it. By limiting our understanding and all this, God has left room for us to be creative in the midst of what we are doing in this world. Creative in how we worship. Creative in how we assume authority. Apply stewardship, fulfill our responsibility. And so part of our role as image bearers is a certain amount of what I'll call bound freedom. We are called to express our designed uniqueness towards His designed purpose. Now we get kind of this purpose and where things are going a little bit in the cultural mandate. Now does anybody know what the cultural mandate is? Right, as we read through the Bible, God gives us kind of some of these shorthands every once in a while. We know some of these. What is the greatest commandment? Does anybody know the greatest commandment? Right, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, love your neighbor as yourself. How about the Great Commission? I kind of heard that, right? Yeah, right over here. Go, therefore, make disciples of all nations, baptize. We know these pretty well in the evangelical church. Today, we're going to look at the first one that's given to us in the Bible. There's a shorthand of who we are and what we're supposed to do that, for whatever reason, I don't think has been taught nearly as well, and it's the cultural mandate. Cultural mandate is, and God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of all the earth and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And every beast of the earth and every bird of the heavens and everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw everything he had made, and behold, it was very good, and there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. What is this calling us to do? It's right there on the screen. Be fruitful and multiply. What does that mean? Have lots of kids, right? That's where it begins. And by the way, you guys are all doing great on that one. Right, if Adam and Eve didn't have any kids, that would be the end of the human race. So that was kind of important, especially there at the very beginning. Their multiplying is for the sake of bearing fruit, though. It's not just to have kids. It's to actually create something positive, to produce something, to produce image bearers, people who know who God is, who are worshipers, who are stewards, who are living out all the things we just talked about. What else? Fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth. Now, what does that mean? Fill the earth with what? Children? Yeah. But, what? Yeah. And it's not just the image bearers, but it's the image bearing that they're doing. So what happens when you send out image bearers? We're going to make, okay. Yeah, just chart that out, right? More image bearers. But what are they doing? Exploring, worshiping, creating, right? This is the call, not just to send people out into the world, but to actually bring human creativity to bear on the world. See, far too many people will read this and kind of go, okay, it started in a garden, and God basically just kind of expected the world to always stay as a garden. No, he didn't. He expected these people to go out and create literature and government and all the things that now are part of the world. So they had to go out and fill the earth. For what purpose? What does that mean? What does it mean for image bearers to subdue the world? Yeah, bringing God's order to it. Now, this takes on a whole different thing once sin comes into the world, because now you got everything is fighting it. But even in the early stages, what does Adam do? He names the animals. Why does he name the animals? He's bringing order to the creation. There's now an understanding of who these animals are, and then we can start to put them into, you know, kingdom, phylum, class. What is it? There you go. My kids know that. Right? So that's the first stage of being able to kind of now go into the sciences and understand what these animals are and explore and put them into play. So the idea of subduing it is to bring the creativity of human beings to bear on the earth in a way that is in line with God's order, that is worshiping, that is stewarding the world, and that is putting it, really, and bringing beauty to it. The other part is the have dominion that we've already talked about. So it's not just filling it with things for the sake of filling it with things, but those things are now going to bring everything into its right order and into its right place. Again, once sin comes in, this becomes far more difficult because now the earth is fighting against that order. It becomes a lot more work. But the whole idea is that human beings are going to go out and again, creatively bring God's order and truth to bear in the world. And at the end of all of this, God says it was very good. Up to this point in creation, everything was good, but after creating human beings, giving this command, having all the pieces in place, God says it is very good. All of the pieces now for God's plan, as we talk about this idea, this process, this result, they're all in place now. God has given the command to human beings. This is how he is going to work out his plan in this world. It's going to be through human beings. And so in the cultural mandate, we see that God's idea is to work out his plan through people. And he intends human beings to be moving forward towards something new and developed. Again, it's not just to keep the garden as it is. It's to tend the garden and make new plants and grow new things. As we saw with the animals, all of them are bearing new seed, creating new animals, creating new people. There's supposed to be this forward movement in the world. It wasn't just supposed to stay Adam and Eve in the garden. There was always this idea for things to move forward. And so image bearing means recognizing our part in creation is in relation to our Creator. He has made us to be his, given us the ability, and called us to use our abilities for his glory. And this task of having dominion and being stewards is not something that's just supposed to be a burden to us. Right? Oftentimes we're like, oh, work is so hard. But it was originally created to be a joy. At the end of the sixth day, we see that everything was good. Nothing else needed to be done for God didn't have to create anything else. And what God had created for people here was a playground. Right? It was a garden of yes with a tree of no in the middle. And so we see that this world exists as something for us to worship in and enjoy. And all this subduing and dominion and authority and responsibility are all places for us to find the grace of God. And while sin has complicated this, and again, we'll talk about that next week, the core of this world is still exciting and joyous and kind of wild. It's a playground. And while it takes a bit more work now for us to find the creativity, to find the beauty in it, it's what we were created for. This is what God has made for us to do. All right, that was a lot. I'm going to hand it over to Clarissa. She's going to teach us about watercolor.